Well, good morning, members. I'm going to call the Committee on Human Services, Finance, and Policy to order. It's Friday morning, so please put on your calendar. The next few Fridays, we'll be adding this to our committee agenda. Next week, members, we're going to be hearing a whole slate of bills, so please be sure to check your email and the committee website for those bills and any amendments that appear. Today, we have one bill in front of us to discuss. Before we do that, we're going to take the roll call and then pass the minutes. Ms. Hansen, can you please take the roll?
Of course. Good morning, everyone. Chair Schultz.
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Lead Albright.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Representative Keel. Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Noor.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen is excused. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandell.
Present.
And we also have Representative Schumacher excused today. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. We do have a quorum. Representative Robbins, would you like to move the minutes from February 25th?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the minutes of February 25th.
Thank you. Representative Robbins moves the minutes from February 25th. Any discussion or corrections to the minutes? Okay, seeing none. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved from February 25th, 2021. Thank you, members. So today before us is House File 1024. I'm going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the Human Services Finance Bill. It looks like you have an amendment, Representative Pinto, the A2 amendment. Would you like to introduce that before you start discussing your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, the A2 amendment adds a transition advisory council and transition lead. The bill has a department that takes effect in 2 years, and this is in response to a suggestion made at a prior committee stop. And so I'd ask you to adopt the amendment to put the bill in the shape that I wish. Thank you.
Okay, all those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment to House File 1024, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the A2 amendment is adopted. So thank you, Representative Pinto, for being with us and in our committee to present your bill. This is a bill that develops a new department on early childhood. And I just want to, before we begin, really thank Representative Pinto for all the work he's doing as chair of early childhood and that he's been doing in this area for several years. So thank you, Representative Pinto, and for all the work you're doing in your committee. I attended a brief this morning, partly for 30 minutes, and Representative Pinto clearly knows a lot about information and data and studies and research on where we are as a state in early childhood and where we need to get to. So thank you for that work, Representative Pinto. Please proceed to describe your bill, and then you have testifiers, and then we'll go to members' questions.
Good. Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. And thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present this bill today to my colleagues on the committee. I'm going to bring up a presentation that I'm going to use just briefly. It was sent out to you members very shortly ago, but it'll also be up on the screen. I want to apologize that the very first slide has the wrong committee and date. I hadn't updated that, so I'll probably move from that very quickly here. But just want to make sure, members, as we start, as we talk about the idea of creating a Department of Early Childhood, that we recognize that our agencies currently were set back in the early days of the Plenty administration, and that our understanding of how foundational early childhood development is has really advanced greatly in the time since we structured agencies 20 years ago. This seminal report from Neurons to Neighborhoods that came out, in fact, in the year 2000, really has us understand that early childhood development is absolutely foundational to everything else that we do. And I would hope members in our committee that we know this, but I think it's worth just to point out a couple aspects of this, that the opportunity gaps that we're so concerned about occur, they're set very, very early in life. They're not at birth, but you can see that in the 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, they steadily open up. And by the time kids are in school, they are set very much from then on. And so this is why we recognize that there is, in fact, a big payoff in the earliest years. And there's a physician at the Children's Hospital that I've heard make the point that the most important and influential year of our lives is one that we can't remember, which is the first 12 months. And recognizing that those gaps are set early in life such that third grade reading scores are very much correlated with information available at age two. And I'm, as a prosecutor, I think folks are aware of that background. There are states that make prison building plans based on third grade reading scores. And so there's so much that is set in the earliest years. And members, I recognize this proposal does not expand early childhood programs. So you may be wondering, well, you know, I get it. This is important. But this is a proposal that simply talks about consolidating the programs in a different structure. And the expansion, of course, is a separate conversation. But I think it's important at the outset to note two things. So one is the programs that we have in this space, whatever they are, getting this time right is foundational to everything else we're doing in state government and society. The work we do in the Human Services Committee, this is core work to make sure we're living out our obligations for people to be living dignity, et cetera. That's core to the work that we do. Early childhood work is that, and it's more in that it's foundational. The people fixing all the other problems we do as a society, every single person hearing my voice, that all depends on things going right in the first couple of years. And even in the short term, childcare is an economic driver in everything else that we're doing in our society, in business, and in our social services and everything else. That's point number one. This is foundational. And point number two is that right now, short of the lieutenant governor, the governor, lieutenant governor, who are of course responsible for many other things, there is no person in state government with authority and responsibility for early child development and learning. There's no one who has the authority and responsibility for this critical foundational aspect of our work. Indeed, right now, members, we know that the programs in this area, this OLA report from 2018, are in fact, it's the opposite of that they are complex and they are fragmented. And this ends up being very challenging. There's different eligibility requirements and a number of other pieces. This is just a sample of some of our early care and learning programs. You'll note the CCAP program overseen by DHS, the other three actually overseen by MBE. But there's a wide variety, and we could extend this. These are obviously the main ones, but there's a wide variety. I think you'd see just looking at this, some of the complexity and some of the fragmentation that the OLA report was finding. Let's dive into that just a little bit more, but they've made the point that the result of this is burdens for families, lower access to needed services, and difficulties for program providers. We won't get into this now, but I'll just note that the families experiencing these burdens are at the very most difficult time of their lives. You've got the lowest income of your life when you have little children. Providers the worst pay of anybody who has a high school occupations requiring a high school diploma. There's a very challenging situation for everybody involved, and we have complexities in the programs. The OLA report, just a couple excerpts here, you'll see what's highlighted there, that when you've got the provider with both the Child Care Assistance Program, remember that's DHS, Early Learner Scholarships, MBE, families don't necessarily understand how they operate, how they're different from one another. They can be caught unaware by the loss of eligibility for CCAP. That means that scholarships is funding that from the other area. Families may lose altogether. From these different pieces from different departments. And I'm really trying to focus on kind of how does this have an impact on families, which is of course the most important thing for us. Also local school officials talking about how they have a hard time keeping straight how children can be funded via one of these funding streams and find that it's extremely complicated. And our childcare providers have said that they really end up having to move into a case management role. The people who we want to have focus on the early care and learning for the children they're caring for. Again, these are really underpaid folks to begin with. Surveys have shown that a quarter of them are concerned about food for their own families because they have such low pay. But then they have to be in a case management role, trying to even figure out how these different pieces fit together. And so members, this ends up being a real challenge. And my thinking is, and the purpose of the bill then, is to have a department that has a strategic focus on child development, care, and learning at this very most important time of life. Again, not just to address the complexity and the fragmentation, and that's important. And I think it helps to have those programs in one place with one agency pushing on that, but also with a broader strategic focus on this very most important time of life and child development and care and learning that are currently in multiple areas, you know, to be able to focus on this work. This is not a new idea. It was suggested by a legislative task force 10 years ago now. The goal at that point was to have all children ready for school by 2020. Obviously, we're now past that. This was, and this has been a movement towards consolidation in other states. And I do want to make a correction, Madam Chair, to you and some other folks I've spoken with, that I have described that a majority of states have consolidated in one agency. It's actually not quite. It's a little bit less than a majority of states have consolidated in one agency, with a number of those states consolidating in a separate early childhood agency as proposed here. But again, a movement in states generally towards having these programs consolidated in one place because of the importance of it. And then finally, last slide, I just want to make sure to point out to folks the program objectives and performance measures in the bill, really making sure that this critical area works out well. In terms of that, you can see these five areas that are spelled out in the bill. I really would encourage you and members of the public who are watching to take a look at page five of the bill to see this spelled out. And then the regular reports to us as policymakers, with a particular focus on the coordination and efficiency among programs and among funding streams. Madam Chair, let me just close this out if I can. I'm trying to get myself back out. Oh, here we go. And so, Madam Chair and members, I want to make sure to emphasize that this is not about individuals doing this work right now in state agencies. And in fact, I have to say, I really cannot think of three more qualified people for their jobs than the Commissioners of Human Services, Health, and Education. I mean, each one of them individually, I just would kind of defy you to think of someone who could be better for in those roles. And of course, our governor, lieutenant governor could not possibly be more focused on the welfare of children. They both come out of that work. There are incredible individuals doing incredible work. It's about the systems and structures and setup that supports that work. And right now we have these pieces in different places. I'll be eager to talk about this more when we get to the questions, but as you said, Madam Chair, I do have a couple testifiers before that with your permission, and thanks so much again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. The first testifier I see is Erica Moss. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erica Moss. I'm the Executive Director of Close Gaps by Five, and I don't come before this committee maybe ever, or certainly not often. So I'll just take a tiny second to inform you all about our organization. We have been working in this space since 2006. We're a business-led organization. Current co-chairs of my board are Mike Cerisi, founding partner of Cerisi Conlin, and Ken Powell, former CEO of General Mills. And our interest in work in this space grows out of work by Art Rolnick when he was at the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, identifying the high potential for return on investment for investments in early childhood education. And our work started as a privately funded effort, $20 million pilot to try out some approaches for scaling up access to high quality early education. And so we've been since that time advocating for those approaches at the legislature. And that work focuses both on more investment, which I think there's broad agreement is needed in this space to take advantage of that ROI, but also on systemic reform. Our goal has always been to create a system, as Representative Pinto says. We don't have a system now. We didn't then. We still don't. We want to create a system that really is designed to serve kids and families well, and also to serve taxpayers well by helping to support that return on investment for taxpayer investments. So we're here today to support House File 1024. Over the course of our work, there have been some important successes in terms of new investment. Unfortunately, disappointingly little in the way of systemic reform. Representative Pinto's already done a really good job kind of outlining where we've been in this space. We too, in recent years, have been very focused on the implementation of the 9 recommendations from that 2018 OLA report. And again, you know, Chair Pinto pointed out there's a lot of good people doing this work in state government. And yet, you know, it's taking a really, really long time to get those recommendations implemented. We believe because the work is spread over a variety of state agencies with, you know, 3 different missions. Some people I talk to in state government say there are 3 bosses. There are 3 missions. What are we, you know, who will we follow? How do we negotiate this? And that creates a lot of headaches for the people doing this work every day. So we think we're at a point now today, given all that we know about the science and the research and the importance of these years, as Chair Pinto pointed out, where we still can't answer the question, who in state government is accountable for ensuring that Minnesota's young children are prepared for school? And how do we, or why do we have such a diffuse and unaccountable approach to early education and development when we know that there is this incredible upside potential for children and families and our communities in the state? I won't go into a ton of detail about the programs that we support. I will reiterate Chair Pinto's points about the fact that the fragmented system isn't just a problem for the people who go to work every day to try to make these programs work and who have to go to extra meetings to coordinate things across agencies. You know, that's a problem. It maybe in and of itself wouldn't be enough to create a new department, but what's enough to create a new department from our perspective are the problems that are faced by the end users of the system, kids and families. So if you have a 4-year-old in Minnesota and you live in a family of 4 that's earning around $45,000 a year, so below that 185% of poverty, you can get some early childhood education services through 4 different programs, 4 different applications, 4 different points of entry. You can go to a community-based organization. You could go to Head Start. You could go to your school district. You could apply through the county for CCAP. Do you know as a parent that you have all of those options? Probably not, often not. You know, if you do, you know, will you go through the process of applying, you know, filling out 4 different application forms and tracking down all of the things that you need to do that? Probably not. It's just not a system that's designed to say, you know, kids and families at the center of this, let's make this easy for you. And there are also provider problems. Representative Pinto mentioned this issue around payments, who's billing whom. That's a real challenge for providers. Think about, you're a small business owner of a childcare program. You have some subsidy kids in your program. Do you bill CCAP first? Do you bill scholarships first if the child has both? You have to, you know, do you use the county system and also the MDE billing system? So there are all kinds of issues like this that ripple through the system. And it's a problem for end users. This isn't about solving bureaucrats' problems. It's a problem for end users. And we want to solve that. So, you know, again, from our perspective, I think that problem for end users is about maximizing. We have existing investments in this area that aren't perfectly maximized in the ways that we would like. You know, maybe a family is on CCAP, but they would rather use Head Start if they knew that that was available. And that's sort of taking up some CCAP resources that could go to another child, and maybe that Head Start slot goes unfilled. So, you know, there are issues around that. There are issues of accountability, as we discussed. There's no one point person to go to say, hey, you know, 2018, 9 pretty good recommendations from the OLA. Where are we? What action steps have been taken? And then the last thing that I would say is that there's a lot of talk, and there's been a lot of work within state government about needing to center systems that serve families, actually center them on families and individuals, not on the kind of bureaucratic needs, as a way to accomplish equity through these investments that we're making. And I'll share a quote from a participant in a recent extensive listening project that was undertaken as part of a grant that MDE has right now to look at these systems and how they are and are not serving families. And this is a quote from a participant who participated from the Leech Lake Tribal Nation. And this person says, simply, create the system to work for individuals, families, and communities, not making the individuals, families, and communities bend to the system. And I think that that is just like a perfect encapsulation of what this is about and what we're trying to do. And I, after, you know, doing this work for 15 years, I don't believe that is possible with these programs and services scattered across agencies. The final thing that I'll just note about how our board of directors, again, business leaders, thinks about this as a, you know, thinks about the question of whether this is just growing government. You know, is this an unnecessary growth of government, or is this actually a necessary step? And I think that if one of them could come before you today, they would say, you know, if in their organizations, they had an opportunity for a product or service that could return a 16-to-1 return on investment, they probably wouldn't scatter the work across different departments, kind of buried in places with separate missions maybe or different objectives. They would consolidate that work and they would put somebody in charge that could answer to them, what did you do today to help us capture this return on investment? And if you know that work weren't happening, that person would be accountable. And so from our perspective, this is not more government, it's good government. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Maas, and thank you for all the important work you're doing for our state and our early learners. We appreciate that. The next testifier is Deborah Messenger. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Deborah Messenger. I am involved with the ISAIAH Project, Kids Count on Us organization. We believe it's time for significant change to our early education systems, and we support the HF1024 because it is a great start in that direction. I am a early childhood educator. I work with infants 6 weeks through age 12. I have also 20 years working in this profession, and I have had many experiences as a teacher, director, small business owner. I am a grandmother, mother first, then grandmother, and I'm very active in my church. The center that I currently work at has a capacity of 90 children, and I would say approximately 80 to 85% is CCAP participants. While I know many people in the public may think of childcare and daycare as people who are just somebody that's keeping an eye on their children while they work, I consider myself as an educator and a brain developer. I have always known my work was so much more than a babysitter. But I realize how significant and important early child care is. Here's an example. With a toddler boy, right before he turned 2 years old, I knew something was wrong. His parents were in denial, so I did some research. I collaborated with my director at that time and other teaching staff on my research, and he fit the description of the autism spectrum. My director reached out to a professional on information on how to teach him. I will never forget the joy that we all felt hearing him start to verbally communicate with us and other children. Since then, we have identified several children with learning disabilities. We do the work of a teacher, but we are not paid accordingly. I know that Child Care Assistance Program, CCAP, is a benefit that is run through DHS and the county, but I truly see it as an educational program. Without it, families, young kids that I help and teach, nurture, could not come here for the enrichment and brain development that they need. I do have a very deep commitment to our families and children. We are often asked questions about CCAP, the process, and the frustration parents have navigating through it. One young woman was in tears because the system was giving her the runaround and her childcare worker was not returning her calls. And she was about to lose her job. I called the worker, as I have done many times, as a courtesy to help get needed information. I did get a call back from the worker and was able to pass on non-sensitive information. However, for this young parent, her childcare approval was too late to keep that employment. Knowing that, I envision a world where CCAP and other early childhood education programs are all put together in one place where parents can get all the attention and support they deserve. There is so much that can be done to align these programs, help families with complex paperwork, and help us providers who want to use all of the state programs we can to help as many kids as we can, and also address the racial disparities in the early childhood education system. Again, Madam Chair and members, I want to thank you for the time to tell my story today, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Messenger, for joining us today and sharing your story and experience. We appreciate it. I will open it up for questions unless Representative Pinto would like to make some additional remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I'm eager to have questions and a discussion with the committee. Thank you.
Okay, Vice Chair Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Pinto, for bringing this forward. Many of you know I did serve on the Early Childhood Committee last time, and you know, I think one of the things that was really hard for me to hear repeatedly is two really important messages. One is that we clearly understood the value and the power of those early years and those early years of development. We clearly understood it. We understood the investment that we put in, as one of our testifiers, I think Ms. Moss suggested, that there's a 16-to-1 benefit to our families, to those kiddos, to our business sector, to everything down the line. We get that. But that at the same time, we heard a lot of things from childcare providers. We heard from teachers and passionate people who care about our kids, that the systems were not people-centered, that we talk a lot about how we get greater efficiencies and modernize the systems to make it easier for childcare developers to do what they do best, care for our kids, right? Instead of the overhead and whatnot, to have those abilities and opportunities to get early home visiting, to pre-K education, to get our kids off to a good start. And there's clear that there's a lot of silos. There's a lot of places where we could have that modernization and those efficiencies, that we could really be investing and making sure that every dollar we spend as a state really yields the results that we want. And unfortunately, because there's all of these pieces in so many different places, it's such a challenge to do that, including from an IT perspective, which is my background. And I know we've had a lot of conversations about how we do process improvement, how do we make life better, more people-centered programs that benefits families and children. And really, I think the idea of consolidating under one roof all of these pieces is a really incredible opportunity for us to not only speak that language, that we want to close the gaps and we want to see the reality of those investments manifest, but it's an opportunity for us to actually make it happen, to have that accountability structure, to have all of those pieces in one place, as one of our testifiers mentioned. So while I don't actually have a specific question, I just wanted to reiterate my support for this measure. And I really think it's a step in the right direction for getting us where we need to be as a state. And just lastly, please note that there are highly red states who are understanding the value of this investment, what it means to our business community and to our families. And they are making the same decision. And so I hope that we in Minnesota, who consider ourselves to be a little more progressive, can also get ahead of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bonner. Representative Mohler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much to Representative Pinto for bringing this bill. And I was just curious to know, due to maybe the lack of coordination and all the different agencies that are currently involved with issues related to early learners, how that's played out during COVID, and if COVID has, you know, in a lot of areas, COVID has really emphasized flaws in our system. And I'm just curious to know if that's true in this arena as well.
Really great question, Representative Mohler. Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mohler. Yeah, that is a great question. And actually, what it makes me think of is one other part of state government that I should have noted earlier and really praised, which is our Children's Cabinet, headed by Erin Bailey, I think it's Assistant Commissioner at MMB, and she has a phenomenal team. It's a small team. It's a few people within MMB that's in a role of coordinating and connecting a number of programs, not just in early care and learning, but much broader and for all of childhood, even up to people in their early 20s. And the reason that I say that in response to your question, Representative Mohler, is that really that that Children's Cabinet team has really led the response in early care and learning during the pandemic, that from the beginning, there have been messages going out to providers, and they've been working just enormously hard, as everyone else has, in responding to the particular crisis. In the pandemic, we had a crisis in childcare that was on top of the pre-existing crisis and some huge challenges going on with that. But it did strike me as I've been kind of looking back and realizing that it's just interesting that you had a situation where this absolute critical foundational area of childcare and early learning, we had our response to that in the pandemic led by this small team that doesn't have anybody reporting up to them. They're not leading these programs. They're connecting with programs throughout various other departments. But really, they ended up being the piece, the people who were kind of the public face in pushing that out and pulling a lot of the pieces together and working enormously hard. So first of all, I just want to make sure to praise that. I mean, they've been doing incredible, incredible work. But it has, for me, kind of highlighted, in fact, the need for this, that you had a team within MMB that was leading our response in this critical area during the pandemic.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Mohler?
No, nothing else. Thanks. That's helpful.
Okay. So it looks like Ms. Moss, would you like to comment on that? No? Okay. Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't have necessarily a question, but just wanted to make a couple of comments as well in support of this effort and thank Chair Pinto for bringing this forward. I have the joy and also serving on the Early Childhood Committee. So have been hearing for weeks, sort of laying the groundwork and the background and the foundation of this, as has been shared. There is a great deal of evidence and research and background that backs this up, and knowing, you know, it's not questioned that we absolutely know that investing in our littlest Minnesotans in this very early stage of their life pays dividends for decades to come, for generations to come, honestly. And so that is well known. And so to me, this proposal really is a win-win. It is makes sense in terms of streamlining and creating efficiencies within our programs and not having them be you know, spread out among multiple folks, and having one person who is accountable and focused on doing this really important work. But also, and perhaps more importantly, it is what is best for kids and families. And that should be the focus as well, to make this process easier for them and make more sense for them, and to put that focus back on what is best for them and the families makes good sense to me. So thank you for bringing this forward, and I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you, Representative Bolden, and thank you for all the good work you're doing on Chair Pinto's committee. We really appreciate that. Let's see, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Representative Pinto for bringing the bill forward here. I really see the need, and from hearing all the information back and forth, we do need a better way of coordinating, bring it all to attention and having nothing getting lost. This reminds me very much of the work that I see over in the water world, where you've got 8 or 9 different agencies that have their different fingers in there. And that's one of the things that we realize, is that when you have something spread out in so many areas, it doesn't become someone's number one priority. And as a result, important things get left behind. Or more importantly, it may come up that you may have one agency thinking one way, one the other way, And because you don't have anyone with ultimate say in that area, it ends up in a deadlock. Where if you got one person, one agency that is responsible for it, they're able to eventually say, no, this is the way it's going to be because they're responsible for everything in early childhood. Same thing that we're struggling with over in the water area. And over in the water area, this is something that's been talked about between Republicans and Democrats, was originally raised by Republicans over in that arena. And it makes sense. If it's done right, it can end up solving a lot of problems out there. And it's while it sometimes seems like you're adding a layer of government on it, in reality, a lot of times what it does, it ends up streamlining things. And in the water area, instead of having to go between five or six different areas, you would then be able to go to one agency. But it's complex. And with water, there's a lot of other science and that stuff that gets into it. But I can see where it makes a lot of sense to be doing this in this area. So thank you, Representative Pinto. I encourage you to keep working on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. And I know that many of us who work in health and human services probably are very accustomed to working with multiple agencies. So even though we're not maybe as familiar with early childhood, we are familiar with how complex things are when you work on a bill and you're working with so many different agencies and different pieces. Let's see, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions, and so I hope you'll indulge me. The first one, and I think this might be directed to the testifier, Ms. Moss. You mentioned an ROI of 16 to 1, and I'm curious, is that a general statement, or does that talk to a specific type of early intervention that really, not to denigrate your comment, but it seems like we're parlaying that to be a broader, more generalized statement than what I have heard that 16 to 1 ratio be talked about.
Ms. Moss?
Sure, Madam Chair and Representative Albright, you're correct. So the 16 to 1 return on investment is specifically for investments that connect children in low-income families who wouldn't otherwise have an opportunity to attend high-quality early learning with high-quality early learning. And so the important ingredients there are targeting and quality in terms of maximizing that 16 to 1 return on investment. The actual research is based on a couple of projects, Abecedarian project and the Perry Preschool project, which were longitudinal studies. So it gave the economic researchers a chance to look over the lifetime of participants, and actually in the case of the Perry Preschool project, at the second generation. And I just actually was on a webinar watching Nobel laureate James Heckman talk about those studies yesterday and about the sort of astonishing benefits that have accrued to second generations, including things like more intact marriages, better job retention, other things. So it's a great question. Thank you for asking. And I guess I would say to bring it home that we don't see the ability to really follow that research, to act on what that research is telling us without consolidating these programs in a single agency.
Thank you, Ms. Moss, and I can support that. As an economist, I'm very familiar with Professor Heckman and his work on investing and the returns of investing in early education. And it's right. What I remember is that it's like 7 to 10% just for preschool, but around 13% returns on birth to five investments in early education. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to follow up on that, Ms. Moss, my understanding in terms of, you know, being in the legislature, I've heard some of these notations, and you know, being a student of economics as well, I think there is a declining beneficial interest in this. And could you speak to the statement that I've heard that those benefits really do start to trail off in around third grade?
Ms. Moss?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, this is actually one of the, I think, lesser understood aspects of that research. So thank you very much for asking. There is research on programs that shows quote unquote fade out. So that would be looking at like academic performance, maybe by third grade or something like that. And that research is oftentimes looking at Head Start, but I think it's a it's a little bit of a misunderstanding to conclude that that's the problem of the early childhood system. A lot of times what's happening in those circumstances, because school readiness is so uneven, because we don't have a good way of ensuring every child is ready for kindergarten, when kids get who are well prepared get to kindergarten, the kindergarten teachers have a mix of children in their class, and maybe you know, the common denominator, if you will, is a lower preparation for kindergarten. And so more focus and attention goes to the children that are farther behind, where there are gaps. And so as long as we have a system where we have some kids getting to kindergarten with a gap, sort of a disproportionate amount of effort and energy is going to be focused, understandably, on bringing those kids up. Well, at the same time, you have children in those classes who came in prepared, and there's always a trade-off there in terms of the support and instruction, and how as a teacher in a mixed classroom you deal with that. And so a lot of the quote unquote fade out is more about the fact that we don't have a good way of assuring kindergarten readiness across kids. But the thing that I think is most important, especially as it relates to return on investment, is that doesn't matter for return on investment, because return on investment is about what happens to adults. Do you graduate high school? Do you maybe seek post-secondary education? Do you get a job? Do you hold your job? Do you get married? And on and on and on. Those are the, you know, are you in the criminal justice system? Are you on welfare? Those are the things where the benefits are accruing. And so what's happening by third grade? Yeah, we should pay some attention to that, sure. But the very most important point is about understanding that the benefits are often, sometimes, you know, non-cognitive is maybe a value-laden term, but social skills, softer skills, the things that really happen, form an early childhood executive function, those things that make adults better able to build a successful life. And that has nothing to do with any of the research on fade out. Those are the things that are accruing those benefits, and that's why we see the high returns.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a few questions. I apologize. I've got carpet being installed at my house, so if you hear a bang in the background, I'm trying to work with that. So I hope you'll indulge that. I have a couple of, actually, a pattern of questions for Representative Pinto. And Representative Pinto, I certainly appreciate you reaching out to me, and I apologize that I was not able to get back to you. So these are not gotcha questions. They're more in the collaboration with making sure that our kids, our little ones, get off to the best start possible. But I do feel it incumbent upon me to ask some questions with regard to the fiscal note, with regard to the transition, the number of FTEs. Obviously, when you're moving parts of three different departments into a new one, there is always going to be turf battles, and they are unavoidable. And even after the fact, in terms of the desire or the temptation, if you will, to backfill both monetarily as well as with new full-time employees. And so several questions, and I'll just lead into one of those right quickly, is just to say from a perspective, will the new commissioner have ongoing rulemaking authority?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Albright, I'm looking forward to the series of questions. In response to the first one, I certainly believe that is the case. I'm going to just make sure that I believe that it's in the bill that the commissioner does. In section 12 of the bill, I believe that provides the answer being yes.
Thank you, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Pinto, I have not received, nor, and I apologize if I just don't find it, but has the fiscal note been completed on your bill?
It's in process, Representative Albright. We'll bring it back up when the fiscal note is ready, and we can discuss that here as well. Representative Pinto?
I'm just going to, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to note, yes, it was requested a couple weeks ago. As you can imagine, it's pretty complicated, so I think it's taking some time. That's one of the reasons I was especially happy to have it being laid over today. In part because that is something that's still being pulled together.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Albright. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto, you know, typically when you're talking with, you know, DHS, MDE, and MDH, you're going to have disagreements about, you know, the funding and the employees in terms of kind of where they go and who they should report to. So how does your bill address, or how would you respond to the subject of Chapter 15 transfer authority being resolved?
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Albright, I should have noted in the introduction, I think I maybe did very briefly, but in talking to folks, we've had expertise around the country and CSL and some other national expertise. And one suggestion was to make sure to really push out the date and ideally of when the department would take effect, and ideally do so with the beginning of a new gubernatorial term, which so this would take effect in 2023. So part of my answer to your question is the need to set out today to say this is coming in 2 years, and to make sure that there is a lot of lead time lead up to it so that the programs are transferring, the decisions made, and that we make sure that there's plenty of time to work through things. As you say, it's somewhat inevitable that when you're making structural changes, that there'll be challenges in doing that. But in part, the thought of that lead time is to make sure that there's some time to work through those. That's at least my general answer to your question. I don't have direct experience with Chapter 15 transitions, and so may have a little bit of trouble with a more specific answer, but that's at least what I've got for now.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions, and then I'll conclude my remarks at the end before we lay it over. Obviously, we're dealing with, as has been said, three bosses, three missions, DHS, MDE, and MDH, particularly as it would pertain to MDE. I'm wondering if, and it may not be germane to this committee, Madam Chair, but I'm wondering if there's anyone from MDE, or if Representative Pinto can speak on their behalf. Certainly, I would not expect him to say that they are in disagreement with this bill, but I'm just wondering, does MDE support this initiative, and what have been the conversations with them over relinquishing some of their responsibility and their funding in their budget?
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as I begin to answer that question, Representative Albright, I should have noted too that the amendment that we adopted today, the author's amendment, did provide a little more of a sense of the transition too in terms of what you were describing. It's a transition advisory council, et cetera. So it maybe helps answer that a little bit. Regarding MDE, and I really would say probably more generally, because you noted MDE, a change in terms of funding and programs. And of course, that's true for those, for the other two agencies as well. I've had ongoing discussions with the agencies. I certainly would not speak on behalf of any of them. But I think what I'd say is that what I've been told is that they're still examining this, certainly have thoughts and concerns and ideas. And I've had conversations both stretching back a number of months, but then also as the bill has come together, had continued conversations. Certainly I cannot say that the departments are in position of endorsing or supporting the proposal. They're thinking through things and having ongoing conversations. And at this point, I've not received anything official saying any particular stance on it.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence. I guess, Representative Pinto, I do not disagree with the import to get our early learners off to a great start. But the function of standing up a new department, whether they call it an agency or department, certainly gives one pause. It's eerily reminiscent, but for other reasons, to back in the 1970s when a group of legislators got together and said, we needed a coordinating commission around, the planning out for the growth of the suburbs. And that took on the context of the Met Council. And while, the legislature always says, well, we'll make sure that they don't and prevent them from creating mission creep for themselves, I think we're standing up a department to some extent at our own peril. And I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't look at the programs that are already inherent, but I would dare say that sometimes when we stand something up, we create a new animal that sadly goes beyond the control and or the focus of that which wasn't intended. So I think standing up a new department is at our own peril, particularly when you think about the mission creep that could be abdicated to them, particularly if they have rulemaking authority in the years and to come. So I say that not as a derogatory statement towards the emphasis and the effort, I certainly want to work with you in terms of providing the best opportunity for our kids to get off to a great start. I'm not exactly convinced that this is the best way, but I do think it has caused everyone to have a conversation about it, and I think that's always a good thing. And so I look forward to more conversations with you personally on this, and I look forward to the debate going forward as it moves through the committee structure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Please send us pictures after your remodeling is finished. Representative Pinto, you know, Ms. Moss describes current problems that providers, child care providers, and counties are experiencing when they need to go to multiple agencies. Can we address some of those problems more quickly? And, or are there bills being worked on right now to help with that problem specifically before we have a discussion and wait 2 years for a potential new agency?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just before I answer, if I could just say a response to Representative Albright that I really appreciate his thoughtfulness and his observations. It had not occurred to me to compare this proposal with the Met Council. I will say that was a new that had not popped into my head. So I appreciate him the thought that he's given to this, and I'll be eager to continue talking about it with him. Regarding your question, Madam Chair, quite a few proposals, as you can imagine, we in our committee and beyond are hustling just as best as we can to identify and to address all of the various challenges in this space, and certainly the challenges posed by having pieces in different places. So yes, there are a number of ideas and proposals relating to that. I will note, though, it's a challenge to a certain extent to do that. There's not a central leadership entity to guide the changes. So for example, the fact that you've got different eligibility requirements, a different structure and all between, let's say, CCAP and early learning scholarships, well, who would actually propose those standards, or like exactly where would that come from? Because we're often looking to agencies for guidance, but you've got kind of a focus on one, you've got a focus on another, et cetera. So we certainly are continuing to push in whatever way that we can, but it feels like kind of in the long run, and of course, this whole idea is about the long run. In the long run, having a dedicated department with a focus to then be able to have each of these pieces to say how can they fit together is going to be much more effective than trying to deal with one piece over here. No one has kind of stepped back and have all the pieces in one place. We do now on the House side in the legislative area, but not in other areas, and that ends up being a challenge.
Thank you. And Vice Chair Bonner mentioned that there are many states working on something similar. And I know that there are at least 5 states that have a separate agency, and states that consolidate maybe in one agency. Can you tell us more about what other states' experience has been and their outcomes?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, for that. Yeah, and to be clear, that is an alternate approach. So if we look at this and say, you know, these really do belong together, an alternate approach taken by a number of states is to consolidate in an agency. The question is, would you consolidate these early learning programs, et cetera, in the human services in DHS, or potentially MDH, probably more likely DHS? That could be done. I can see there could be some challenges to that. Another alternative is, but some states do that in their human services department. Another alternative is to do that in the MDE, but then you've got MDE having oversight, et cetera, over family child care and others, which is a possibility. And again, some states do that. So that's an alternative path. Regarding how it's worked, it's something that is, as I say, it's definitely a trend in the states. I think on the slide that I had, it showed some of the more recent states that have adopted versions of this. And in general, what they've found is that there is a much stronger strategic alignment in where they're pushing in this area. It just makes it harder to have that kind of focus when you're trying to coordinate programs that are in pieces in different places. Or it's possible that Ms. Maz or somebody else may have other thoughts on that, but that's my thinking.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Ms. Maz, anything to add to that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. The only thing I would add is that, from our perspective, we watch closely what's happening in other states and how other states are organizing themselves to take advantage of these opportunities and solve these problems. And it does feel like we're behind in this regard, in regards to governance, not solving this particular problem. I think the states that have are further ahead in service of kids and families in those states. Most notably, we pay a lot of attention to and work with colleagues a lot in Washington State, where they've had this kind of consolidation for many years. I think they first established their department, their first iteration, maybe in like 2011 or 12. And I think that they, you know, in terms of outcomes, they have a very specific goal that they're working toward in Washington State. They haven't achieved it yet, but everybody knows what the goal is. And the goal is that 90% of children will be ready for kindergarten, and that that readiness will not be predicted by race or geography. And they have really been able to, with all of their programs in a single department, focus on achieving that goal. And it's been very impressive to see the work that they've accomplished because of that.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. Vice Chair Bonner.
Thank you. And fortunately or unfortunately, I think the chair actually sort of alluded to part of the question that I actually had. But I know, and we talk a lot about process improvement and how important it is to have a singular mission and to have that. And I think the legislature, in some respects, is uniquely qualified to help define the scope of a department, as well as sort of guide what that mission could be, and working with stakeholders and agencies and making sure that we have that clear vision. And I guess my question had been how successful that path had been for other states who had gone down that road. But I think it may have, to some degree, been answered by Chair Pinto and Ms. Moss already.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bonner. Anything to add, Representative Pinto?
No, I mean, we certainly can get to, for members as they're interested, some specific examples from other states. Washington State was alluded to by Ms. Moss. Massachusetts has had a great deal of success in terms of, you know, what you're trying to do is to orient around readiness for kindergarten. I guess maybe what I'll just note right now for members is to think, you know, so once kids turn five, we do have a system in place through our education system that really, it's called Department of Education, but you really could call it Department of Education and mostly school age care. It's not all school age care, but it's quite a bit of it for kids at that age, right? And because we made a decision as a society a long time ago that age five, that's where we're at. Recognizing this is a different structure, different setup, and yet child development and learning at these ages is really critical as well. And a number of states have had quite a lot of success then in orienting around a goal of saying we want children to be ready for kindergarten, and then using the different tools we have, which is not just out-of-home experiences in childcare, but it does include home visiting, it includes, you know, ECFE programs, it includes a number of the pieces that we have to make sure the families get that those kinds of services and support that they need, but certainly including early care and learning. So we're ready to reach that goal. And a number of states have had a lot of success in orienting around that goal.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. I'm not seeing any other hands up or questions from members. So Representative Pinto, closing comments.
Madam Chair and members, thank you so much for this discussion. This is, I will freely confess, Madam Chair, this is a big idea. I've really appreciated the comments from Representative Albright, and there's other members I've had conversations with, and it's been extremely helpful, and I'm going to look forward to continuing those conversations. I think Representative Albright had closed his comments with saying that it's really good to have a focus by all of us on this area. I continue to think that this is there's a real opportunity here. And an opportunity that having the focus of the department would very much allow us to do. And I'll look forward to continuing those conversations. I know we're waiting a fiscal note, some other pieces that we're going to need to do. So I look forward to getting back together to discuss this. And Madam Chair, thanks. Many thanks to you, especially for putting this together. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we were lucky to have this time on Friday to talk about this bill. It's a big issue, and it's good to have the background overview. So thank you for that, Representative Pinto. And I hope our House research librarians are listening, or maybe they can go back to the tape, but I would love to see some history of what we've done in the past as a state in terms of restructuring our agencies. So hopefully they're listening. They'll get back to me via email with some excellent things to read about the history of our agencies, restructuring, anything we can learn from that as Representative Pinto develops this proposal. We really appreciate the testifiers that came today and all the work they're doing. So thank you for being here. Members, we have a list of bills for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We'll be meeting next Friday as well. So thank you for allowing us to take over your Friday morning. I know many members have additional committees today, so we appreciate your time on Friday, members. And with that, this bill, like I said, will be laid over. And then when we see the fiscal note, we can discuss that. And with that, members, we are adjourned. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend.